Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up? This is DeJuan Boyd, a.k.a. DJ Rabbit, representing Rabbit Productions, hanging out chilling with my girl, Cy Boogie. That's right, Cy Brown, right here on LifeRemixedRadio.com. Say word.
What's happening, everybody? Today is August 1st. It's Friday. You know, don't they have those, first Friday parties? I know they have them here in New York, but I think they have them in other cities, too. They're like first Fridays where business professionals get together, and there's a lot of quote-unquote networking going on, and after the networking, it usually leads into a party. You know, I used to go to these things years ago, but then it seemed like it was less about business and just more about getting a swerve on. Hold on, I just have to put some chapstick on. Okay, sorry about that, everybody. It was more about, a party instead of getting your business contacts and connects on. But anyway, today is Friday, August 1st. So to all of you, big shout out to everybody who's going to First Friday parties. Big Ink Presents just joined us in the chat room. He will be a guest later on, a little bit later on in the show. We're going to be bringing him back. Yesterday, he was our featured guest on Black in America Part 1. So we're going to, kind of do a Part 2 today. I just want to say I'm happy to be alive. I mean, everything we do here at Life Remix Radio is really about bettering yourself, where we can kind of talk about health and love and spirituality, religion, politics, hip-hop, business, just everything, just what makes us a better us. Next week, we will have all authors on the show, just straight. If you wrote a book, nonfiction, preferably nonfiction, tune in and you're going to be able to hear just a whole lot of authors share their trials and tribulations, how they did it. I just want to give a special shout out to my buddy, Carl Agard. He's joining us on Tuesday, so I'm really amped about that. Thank you, Carl. And all the other guests have already been scheduled, but we always make room. Story is compelling, and it definitely touches the hearts and souls of the listeners. We can squeeze you in. Y'all know my producer, Shamika, is going to kill me because I'm always making adjustments. But you know what? We have a great team here on Life Remix Radio. We're just bringing you your daily dose of urban inspiration, where we share conversations and solutions just to let you know what? There is hope. So what? Gas is $4 a gallon. So what? Hours are being cut back. You can still thrive and you can still live. And on that note, I'm just going to read today's Daily Thoughts from the Hill, coming straight at you from Hillside Chapel and Truth Center in Atlanta. And so, it's funny because I tell you all the time, I never read this before I get on the air, but this is what it says today. I finish what I start. We start many things that we do not complete. We abandon many of our projects because we give in to fear and doubt that we can complete what we have started. Let me read through and then I'll add my commentary. We begin to affirm that we do not have time, resources, and or the energy to get it done. We lose the desire to complete what we have started, but we continue to hold the thought in the back of our minds that perhaps someday we will get back around to getting it done. Finishing what we start is a good indicator of our faith, patience, and perseverance. I begin today finishing what I have started. I see the end product, and I have faith that it is done. Whatever I need in order to complete the task, God will provide. I have all the time I need, all the ideas I need, and all the energy I need. I finish what I start. Thank you, God, in me, as me, and so it is. And today's scripture reading comes from the book of Ezekiel, chapter 36, verse 26, and it reads as follows. A new heart will I give you, and a new spirit I will put within you. I had to be careful. I was getting ready to interject my own commentary. I had to try to, get through this. I had a problem of starting stuff and not finishing it, and that's what happens a lot. And I've actually had to do research on this. Creative people are like that. I sat today and just came up with three new fantabulous things that I would like to do. And luckily, I'm going through my own personal coaching sessions. I have a life coach that I use. Even though I'm a coach, I still received coaching from a life coach. And I was taught that, you know, sometimes you can just get information overload, and that happens the more you're connected to your source, if that makes sense. The more you're connected and the more open and receptive you are to thoughts and ideas, the more you're going to receive. You know the adage, if God trusts you with a little, he's going to give you more. So we just have to be careful and know when to say, you know what, this is not for me. What I do now is write down, believe it or not, write down every single idea of, you know, that I get, every thought that comes to me, and I put it in like a little tickler file. I just have like a little diary that I write in every day, and a lot of times I'm speaking with people and I can refer back to it, or I'll tell them, oh, you know what, I have some information for you, I'll call you back, or I have some information for you and I'll shoot it to you in an email. Because a lot of times, and it took me a long time to realize this, a lot of times we get stuff, but it's not meant for us. So let me repeat that. A lot of times when you get all of these ideas and thoughts into your head and you think it's for you and you start going off on these tangents, which I call them a tangent, you know, you start veering off to the left and veering off to the right, and all of that information that comes to you is not necessarily meant for you to act on. So, I don't know, you know, I use index cards a lot. I don't know what you may want to use, but just know that everything that comes to you may not necessarily be meant for you. So I share that with the hope and prayer that you kind of get it. And, you know, I can't tell you to start a tickler file, but I'm just saying what works for me. And what works for me is just keeping a little log, so when somebody does come to me, I can say, oh, you know what, I have some information for you. And it just makes life better. It makes me feel better that God uses me to help other people. So, you know, that's just what it is. What's going on in pop culture, everybody? Well, here's the thing. This whole thing about Obama interjecting race into the election, if anybody with two eyes and half a brain can see that Barack Obama is black. So I don't know how, in fact, people think he's injecting race into this political election because he's black. Race is automatically going to come into this election, whether we like it or not. And I'm sure they're doing their homework. I'm sure they're doing all of these things to find little things. And just the whole concept of that ad where they put him with Britney Spears, it's kind of dumb. Like, how do you compare Barack Obama, that he's a pop icon or he's a rock star, with Britney Spears and Paris Hilton, who basically are just famous for being famous? And so I know you've probably been hearing this the last couple of days on the radio and on the television and in just different multimedia outlets, but it just bothers me that they're going to compare Barack Obama, who's a black man, to two white girls. Like, I don't even understand the correlation except for the fact that people talk about them. You know, it's just stupid. And I personally think it's going to backfire because if, in fact, it does backfire, you have to look at it from a perspective of we live in such a celebrity-obsessed society. So if, in fact, we live in such a celebrity-obsessed society, how, in fact, can it be a bad thing that Barack Obama is perceived as a celebrity? I don't know. And I just think it's something that we have to look at and wonder, well, what is John McCain trying to prove with this? Is he trying to just say, well, you're a celebrity, you can't lead? I mean, I don't know. It just, you know, I don't know. It just doesn't make much sense to me. And I just want to read you something. I'm going to actually read a couple of things to us today just to kind of set the tone for the show today, where we're talking about black, you know, Black in America Part 2, that whole piece that was on CNN. And, you know, it just kind of feeds in to the dialogue, into the election, into all these things. So I want to read you something. Let me just pull it up very quickly. Y'all know I try to have everything in front of me. I'm reading this from the Daily Voice, which is Black America. It's calling itself Black America's Daily News Source. And I follow Keith Boykin a lot. He is the editor, I believe he's the founding editor, but I see him a lot on MSNBC. And the Daily Voice just says, McCain accuses Obama of playing the race card. And this so ties into what we're talking about today, Black in America, not even just the issue of CNN, because I have one more piece I'm going to read to you, but just this whole race issue. Okay, as it's reported in the Daily Voice by a staff reporter, it reads as follows. John McCain's campaign on Thursday accused Barack Obama of playing the race card in the presidential campaign. Barack Obama has played the race card, and he played it from the bottom of the deck, McCain campaign manager Rick Davis said in a statement. It's divisive, negative, shameful, and wrong, he said. The charge from the McCain campaign came in response to Senator Obama's comments to voters in Missouri on Wednesday that the Republicans are trying to scare voters. Quote, so nobody really thinks that Bush or McCain have a real answer for the challenges we face? So what are they going to do, try to make you scared of me? End quote, Obama said in Springfield, Missouri. Quote, you know he's not patriotic enough. He's got a funny name. You know he doesn't look like all those other presidents on those dollar bills. You know he's risky. That's essentially the argument they're making, end quote, Obama said. The Obama campaign was quick to distinguish its criticism of McCain's low road politics from a critique about race. This race is about big challenges, a slumping economy, a broken foreign policy, and an energy crisis for everyone but the oil companies. Just my two cents. Did anybody hear how Exxon, I believe it was Exxon, or Shell just got like $11 billion in profits in last quarter alone while we're paying $4 and something cents a gallon for gas? So sickening. But anyway, continuing on with the article, quote, Barack Obama in no way believes that the McCain campaign is using race as an issue, but he does believe they're using the same old low road politics to distract voters from the real issues in this campaign and those are the issues he'll continue to talk about. But Daily Voice editor Keith Boykin accused the McCain campaign of playing the race card by accusing Obama of using the race card when Obama never mentioned race in his remarks. In a debate with conservative commentator DeRoy Murdoch on CNBC's Kudlow & Company Thursday night, Boykin also accused the McCain camp of running a negative campaign. I mean, this is ridiculous. So now we're accusing people of he talked about race or he pulled the race card, but he didn't pull the race card. I mean, it's just nuts. I want to read one more piece to you, and this is by Dr. Boyce Watkins, and I actually wrote to him to ask his permission to read this over the air, and I never got a response. So I'm going to read it anyway, but I am quoting the source, quoting that I am reading this from Dr. Boyce Watkins' commentary, and it's listed on his website. So it reads as follows. It's going to be about three, four minute read, but this is the perfect segue into our conversation. So Big Ink presents, Aranzu, you can call in, but I'm not going to pick up to chime you into the conversation until after I finish reading this piece. Mindy BTR in the chat room, I just want to say thank you for joining us. And caller from 201-433, thank you for joining us today. Today we are talking about part two of our conversation from yesterday, Black in America. So we have guests calling in and joining us to discuss the CNN segment that aired last week. We're exploring the mindsets of behind Black Republicans, politics and race, our welfare system. So today's going to be a good conversation. So the piece I'm about to read for you, written by Dr. Boyce Watkins, is a perfect segue. So it reads as follows. Let me get some water first. Hold on. Okay, now I'm ready to read. CNN's Black in America, Exactly What It Was Meant to Be, by Dr. Boyce Watkins. When I received the email about CNN's recent Black in America, I wasn't happy, wasn't sad, I was indifferent. I saw it for what it was, an attempt to use viral marketing to achieve a ratings against Fox News. But after seeing the same damn email forwarded to me over and over again, I knew one thing. Many Black people were excited, really excited, as if CNN were the Union Army and this were a modern-day Juneteenth. The The email is forwarded as a, quote, must-see, save-the-date, tell-your-mama, grandmama, baby-mama event that was going to change the world. Finally, the predominantly white media was going to give us a fair shake and truly tell our story. They were going to help white America understand what we go through, why we are not the animals some think we are. They were going to present the hurdles and solutions that will help us come together as a nation. Call me a skeptic, but if the media has never told our story accurately in the past, what the hell made us think they were going to do it right this time? Given that some label me a haterologist, and that's in quotes, for daring to question the religious figure known as Barack Obama, I am cautiously yet strongly supportive and protective of Barack, but I insist that anyone who gets my vote communicates an effective urban agenda. I chose to let the liquor keep flowing at the, quote, we shall overcome via CNN, unquote, happy hour in Black America. In other words, I remain silent since it's no fun to bring bad news. Academics are trained to be skeptical, even if we think something is good. All of us were ready to pull out the popcorn and Kool-Aid to stare down the TV set like we were watching Beyonce give birth in outer space. The CNN event was truly the Black middle class version of the BET Video Music Awards without all the gold teeth and stuff. I watched the show the same way I normally watch CNN, between flights at random airports. I don't even watch CNN when I appear on the network since I stay pretty busy. I won't say how I felt after the special. I'll just let you read my facial expressions through these words. Imagine a modest-looking, young, oldish, blackish-brownish bald man with a twisted frown-like scowl, a twitching, squinted left eye curled up at the bottom lip and gritted teeth, viewing a TV screen between his two middle fingers, sort of like the face you make when watching an Olympics gymnast fall crotch-first onto the balance beam right before breaking his leg. Black in America was a socio-political love fest between CNN and Black people that just wasn't going to materialize. It was the day when we in middle-class Black America truly thought we were going to be vindicated as the world would and the world would finally learn to love us. Black America became Jeremiah Wright at the National Press Club, thinking that the same media that destroyed his image was going to be the source of image repair. But like Jeremiah Wright, whom I respect tremendously, we marched away angrily, kicking the cracks in the sidewalk, shocked that we'd all been bamboozled. We were finally invited to the game, but only so they could use our ball and make us the mascot. That's brilliant. I don't hate CNN. I've done a lot of work with them. I do, however, hate Fox News. Well, just Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity. Great job this week, Nas, even though you should stop marketing yourself as a replacement for Jesse Jackson. I don't question the motives of the producer. Oops, hold on. Sorry about that, everybody. I don't question the motives of the producers, including Soledad O'Brien, a woman I truly believe to care about Black people. I also felt that Paul Azan, a former host, wanted to really dig to the root of racial inequality in an honest way. I did not, however, feel that CNN could pull off an honest conversation on race, and I don't believe they wanted to. They were, to me, like American generals thinking they could muscle their way to peace in Iraq. They felt as if they spent enough money, engaged in enough viral marketing, and got enough Black people excited, they could create a ratings monster. Don't worry, people, we're almost through. CNN achieved its goal. What made me feel bad for Black people is that many of us actually thought that their goals were the same as our own. Here are some quick thoughts. Black people were not the target audience of this series. CNN was not talking to Black people, but they were talking about Black people. Number two, most of the content for TV news shows, guest selections, and everything else comes from the mindset of the producers, and most producers of cable news shows and all of the hosts are non-Black. Point three, Black in America series was done for one reason, to take away Fox News' Black voters. Black people hate Fox, and I'm glad they do, and to defeat Bill O'Reilly at the ratings game. Number four, the way this show was done underscores the need to finance and secure more Black-owned media. I shared this with Reverend Jackson this week since I was disappointed that his mishap with the microphone occurred on Fox. Well, support my show. I'm Black-owned media. That's my little interjection. Point five, personally, I was a bit offended by Black in America series, primarily because it gave me exactly what I expected, a series of shallow statistics and vignettes featuring the most dramatically negative aspects of our existence, all provided without content to an audience that sits back and says, what's wrong with those people? only black people feel the pressure to answer for every little thing that happens in all corners of our community. When will we ever say that we're embarrassed by something we saw on TV? I've never seen a white man get embarrassed by the behavior of someone in a trailer park, so I don't get embarrassed by Flavor Flav. It is this lack of image diversity in mainstream media that makes us angry at Flavor Flav for simply being who he is. The truth is that we should wonder why he is the only one on the network and not another black image to balance him out. Self-reflection is necessary, but I don't believe in self-hatred. To lift yourself, you must learn to love yourself. CNN's Black in America didn't give us much to love, but looking for love externally doesn't usually work anyway. So why are we trying so hard? The next time CNN offers us a media Juneteenth, this slave will have already left the plantation. I'll be educating my God's kids instead. By Dr. Boyce Watkins, and he is a political commentator, and I abbreviated some of it just for time purposes. But that's a mouthful. I mean, that was definitely a mouthful. I'm going to bring Orandu into the conversation right now. My brother, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me? Better.
Yes,
better
I can. Well, first of all, do you agree or do you not? And before we get into this, I just want to say thank you to Mr. Marcus L. Boston for joining us in the chat room. Thanks a lot, Marcus. I hope you enjoy the show. What do you think? Like, what the easy?
No, I mean, There's a lot, but there are a lot of points that he said, and I think some of the stuff that we addressed yesterday, the point that it's television. Television is there to create ratings. It's a Super Bowl. You bring an event, and you bring people to it, and people make money. That's what it is. He's absolutely right. It's not a social commentary for the upliftment of black people. There's nothing on television that is. When I didn't have cable in Brooklyn, I thought BET was it. Once I got cable and saw what BET was, well, I realized, well, it's my job, like he said, to go back in your community, with your kids, with your friends, start there and then spread that goodness out. Start with the self. Start with examining you. If there's no balance, I am upset at Flavor Flav because he can do better, but I know where to find better, so I can find that balance someplace else.
Yeah, but you know something, just as there's Flavor, but do we want to, I mean, I think Flavor Flav looks absolutely ridiculous. I mean, that's my opinion, but you know what, there is a group of our people that are Flavor Flav-like. The most disheartening thing is, where is the balance? I watch A Different World. I think it comes on BET at like 11 o'clock at night or something like that. Do you know how much I actually learned about us as black people from A Different World? And no, it wasn't that my parents didn't teach me. But what it did is it reinforced the fact that I wanted to go to college. I was so wishing that Hillman College was real. I knew I wanted to go to college, but to see, like, college campus life on TV every Thursday, we have not had a show like A Different World on, and that show went off probably, like, 15 years ago.
Right, shows like that, or at the time, in Living Color, how edgy it was. I mean, how we could poke fun of ourselves. It was almost this fear back then of poking fun of ourselves, and we do it sort of naturally now in the sense of how Flavor Flav is portrayed. We do it, I mean, people don't really think about it. But with you, absolutely. When I first saw A Different World, I think I was in middle school or getting into high school, and it was an inspiration. It was, this is what these people are doing. I saw intelligent, young, articulate black folk just a little bit older than me, and I'm like, I can do that. They're talking about divestment in South Africa, just growing up and what it is to be just a young black person in this country. And I wasn't a thug. I wasn't the guy that was going to jail, so these people I could identify with.
You know, it's so funny because one of the shows I remember, and this made an indelible mark in my brain, Freddie, when they introduced Freddie, well, first of all, I just want to say I went to high school all 4 years with Sean Wayne, so it's just so funny to, like, see him on TV knowing that we sat through English class together in high school. But I remember Freddie, when they introduced Freddie's character, because they never portrayed Jasmine Guy as being biracial. They always put her with a black mother and a black father. And when they introduced the character of Freddie, they introduced her as a biracial student. And at the end of one season, you know, she was just being Freddie. But at the opening of the very next season, that's when they brought in Jada Pinkett. And Freddie's hair was blown straight, and she looked a little more mature. And I remember in the opening show for that season, they were telling her, oh, you sold out, your hair is straight, and you know what she said? She said, I didn't change for anybody else. She said, I changed so I can get into the system and then bring about change. And think of how many times in our life when we try to uplift ourselves, it's our very neighbors, family, and friends that are like, oh, you talk white, or you think you're better than us. And when I saw it on A Different World for that episode, it made me really understand how we're going to have to function in the world. Did you ever experience that yourself?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, like I said, I like the show, and I remember that. I remember her sort of being a Rastafarian, dreadheaded kind of kind of person. She had, her boyfriend was the guy that's on CSI now who had the long dreads, and he was
he was cute.
In Black Power, and I can't remember his name. But, again, I think she wanted to be a lawyer or a judge, and it was this statement that for the years that our people were struggling for freedom and equality and marching and all that, there were an undocumented, unknown cadre, thousands of lawyers and doctors and people walking the halls of Congress, making sure all the rah, rah, rah that was going on in the streets was actually being followed by laws and statutes in this system. So it was all right, it's great. Freddie's got all these ideas, but Freddie ain't getting nothing done. Actually, literally, Freddie's going to be dead. get active politically and really try to do something. Get some money in a house, get some equity, and go out there and do the. She still got it in her. We knew that. She still had the rebel in her, but now she could just function and make a living. And when it was ready to come out, it'll come out.
You know what? What do you think? Okay, let's fast forward this and bring it back to Black in America. What does it mean right now, right here, today, to be Black in America?
Well, you're asking for me as one man. I don't know what it means for the 29 million all of us, but for me as just a man, irregardless of color, what it means for me as a man is being able to provide for my family, to live honestly and do the things that are going to make my life and other people's life better. What else is there for any sane human being? For any sane human being, in terms of policy, in terms of politics, it's also the understanding of a history of progress, a history of being forefront of change in America. We've always been, since we've landed on this rock, the people who have fought to have America live up to its creed. America doesn't want to live up to its creed, but we've always been the ones pushing them and say, hey, equality, hey, no, you ain't been doing it right by us. And as a result, other people have benefited by our action, and I don't think people talk about that enough. They don't, and I think, I feel as a Black man, 32 years old, intelligent, educated, active, trying to be more active, I feel that 400 years in me, and it empowers me every single day when I think about it. It took me a long time to get that strength and to feel it, but I have it. And to be a Black man, to be a real Black man in this country, is to live knowing that no matter what, we're still here. We are still here.
You know what, that speaks volumes, because, and I'm going to say from my perspective what it means to be Black in America. It means I always have to do better, I have to be better, I have to look better. Like, I can't be comfortable. I don't feel comfortable. And I remember when Michelle Obama said, for the first time in my life, I'm proud to be an American, and white people jumped down her throat. But you know something? I agree with her. I cannot walk around this country and feel at ease or feel comfortable, especially since I'm in business, because you know the stereotype, oh, don't mess with no Black businesses. They don't do this. They don't do what they're going to say, which is a crock. You know, I make tons and tons of mistakes. mistakes, but I always try to maintain my integrity, do what I say I'm going to do. But because I'm black, I'm going to be judged more harshly than if I was just a regular business. So I think for me, being black in America just means I can never rest. I don't have the liberty. I don't have the comfort. I don't have the insurance that if I slack just a smidgen, I'll still be okay. I have to read more books. I have to speak better English. My diction has to be better. That's a hard life. And I believe women have it harder than men. Do you find that to be true or not true?
I think in business, and especially in the last 8 months or 9 months where I'm trying to promote a book or trying to get mine out there, it is. It is convincing people that you are not whatever they perceive of you. I mean, let's take something, for example, like affirmative action. People have this misconception that, let's say there's a job, and the job requires you to have an 80 average on the test. Now, people think affirmative action is going to take people who are failing 60, 50, and give them the job that requires them to have 80. Well, it's not. It's designed for the thousands of people who have the 76, 77, 78, and in that range, there are blacks, there are whites, there are Hispanics, there are women. And traditionally, people would just see the negativity, and they would hire the white guy. So it's about you being in a position where you have the advantage, you have the skills, and then maybe sometimes you just need a little bit of help. But I don't think you have to go out of your way as a black person. Maybe I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't put words in your mouth. But I think you're just being the best Ms. Brown that you can be by saying, I have to be better. And I think I think it's you just being the best human being you can possibly be while you have 70 years on this earth.
Nah, I have to respectfully disagree with that one. And I see it with my children. Let me give you an example, just quick example. My grandmother was in the hospital, right? And she fell and got a slight fracture in her hip. And when the doctors came in to take care of her, somebody was always there, my dad, myself, but because I'm self-employed, I can kind of be there, you know, a lot more. Every time the doctor came in, I gave a firm handshake, you know, looked him in the eye, I asked very articulate questions, and I hate to say, oh, she sounds articulate, but I was really on my grind to make sure they knew, you better give my grandmother top-notch care. Now, let's flip that over. Do you think if I had spoken with the doctor, so what you say is going on with my grandmother? Well, and I can't knock anybody that doesn't know better, but honestly, if I had come with my slacker style or that little swagger, do you really think they would have given my grandmother as much attention as they did? I don't think so. And that's what I'm talking about, because the real Saida, honestly, the real Saida walks around with ponytails, jeans, and flip-flops day in and day out. But I know I cannot go out like that because now I'm seen as a slacker or, like, are you with me or are you not on that one?
No, and I wasn't disagreeing with you. I was saying that as a rule, I mean, I guess my question to you, would you be that articulate and you know, dressy if you were going to be black people? That's all
no,
I'm saying is that...
Because
why?
Black standards are so low, unfortunately. And plus, I've been ostracized by black people for so many years of my life. If I had a nickel for every black friend or black peer that told me I talk white, I would be a rich girl right now. And this is
Most
the God's honest truth.
Are they still your friends? You still associate with them or not?
They look up to me. You know, I don't have regular interactions with them, but, you know, they're my cousins. They're people that I grew up with in my neighborhood, things like that. Yeah, sure.
But I think establishing a standard, you've established a standard of the way that you want people to perceive you, and I don't think that standard – well, I mean, if you're going in the middle of a certain neighborhood and you as a businesswoman has to, you know, make certain decisions so you can get at – certain people, of course you're going to do that. When it comes to business, I understand. But in terms of you as a person, I think you're just being the best Ms. Brown you can be.
You know something? I'm not trying to beat up on you, and I never will, because you know I absolutely adore you. And that's why I wanted you to come back today, because we have slightly opposing views on certain things. Let's look at it.
And this one, we agree. We don't disagree.
Oh, okay.
We
I think I'm trying to get you. Okay, let me give you another scenario. Let's follow this one. And this is a joke. This is like the running joke because I do wear flip-flops a lot because I worked from home for so long before I moved into my office and all of this, had fancy staff and all this. Anytime I had to go to my children's school, I don't even care if it was just to drop off a note, I always dressed up. And my children will laugh now because in the morning, like if they saw me getting dressed up, because I used to drive my children to school every day, they knew, uh-oh, mommy's coming inside for something. Because, you know, if I'm dropping them off, I'll have flip-flops, a tank top. But anytime they knew I was getting ready to take them to school, but I actually, like, brushed my hair and put on fancy shoes, they knew, oh, God, what do we do? Mommy's going in to talk to a teacher. I would actually overdress and put on makeup just to walk into the school. And I know it probably sounds shallow, but it's about perception. If I walked into my children's school the way Saida dresses every morning, dropping her kids to school, will I and my children get the same respect from when I come in poised, polished, and ready to ask the teacher a question? Do you see what I'm saying? Like, we always have to, unfortunately, force ourselves to do better, even though that's not who we are.
But I think that has to do with setting. I mean, if you as a businesswoman, or you're going to some place where you want answers from somebody, of course you're going to follow the rules of decorum of that place. My question is, if a white mother who maybe grew up in Appalachia has to go and talk to her daughter's or son's teacher, wouldn't she dress the same way that you would if you were going in to talk to your folks' teacher?
Let me tell you something. You said yesterday you have a five-year-old daughter. I don't
son,
know what school,
son,
a five-year-old son. I'm sorry. A five-year-old son. Wait till your son. Well, see, I don't know what school your child is going to, but if you put your child in a regular public school, you wait to see what comes up and through that school on parent teacher night. You'll see. And I say this not to denigrate our people, but just give it a minute. Let's holler at me when your son is 9 years old and in the fourth grade. And you know what you're going to say to me? Saida, I can't believe those parents come up there looking like that.
Well, I
assume hit me up in the chat room and let me know. What'd you say?
There are grades about people. There are people who have an understanding of how to behave in a certain situation, like you and I, and there are people who don't. And it's sad, but they need to, like school. School, it's not that hard to be successful in school. You read the stuff, you do the homework.
Maybe for me. Okay, I was going to say, okay.
No, maybe for me, because I consider myself an intelligent human being. I've always been an intelligent human being. But, I mean, you do the work, you read, you get the work done, you take the notes, and you regurgitate what they want. That's not too difficult. Listen to me. I'm not making any excuses because I understand the realities. I grew up in Brooklyn. I understand the realities.
Okay, why don't you kind of get where I'm coming from?
I do. We don't disagree. We agree here. I'm not
okay.
playing devil's advocate for the sake of conversation.
Okay.
We got an hour to go back and forth here. It can't be boring.
I love you.
It can't be boring, guys.
Listen, I just want to say thank you to everybody that's here. Well, let me just read some of the stuff in the chat room. Oh, my God, I love doing a radio show every day. You do not know. This is becoming, like, my full-time thing. I just love talking to people and just, this is so intellectually stimulating. Ms. V on the scene says, what an affront to one culture if you play into their expectation of you. Assimilation has and continues to leave remove personal identity. It's part of any culture's demise. I totally agree, but oh well. You have to function. We live amongst them, and assimilation. Yeah, you're right. But I think you have to, or you'll get left behind. And Marcus Boston says, I have to agree with you, Life. A lot of black parents go to their children's schools looking a hot mess. Baby, that's what I'm saying. I have walked into parent-teacher meetings, and I swear I'm not trying to make this about my kids, because you know my kids work my last nerve, and I have two teenagers. One will be 19 next week, and the other is 14. When you walk into these, what happened to black pride. I look at pictures of my grandmother, God bless her, and my grandfather, and I look at pictures of my mom, and we were some pulled together folks. My grandmother and grandfather had shoes and the gloves and the purses. They had way less money, relatively speaking, than what we have now. But by golly, they put that straightening comb on the oven or did whatever. They pulled it. Even if they didn't straighten, they pulled themselves together. They looked so nice. My father said when he was growing up, and my dad was 57, that if you wore tennis shoes or sneakers out, they thought you were like, I don't want to say like, yeah, like poor, I guess. Like, just, what is going on with our people? Can somebody, always, something else, Marcus said, women back in the days always dressed ladylike. The High Road says, we definitely need to see a higher standard of representation among black parents. You know something, you're absolutely right. What were you going to say, Alonzo?
But I think, I mean, also is what I think Ms. B was saying about assimilation. I mean, if there was a generation who had to dress that way because the perception of us was so low. So they had to do exactly what you did when you walk in your child's school to change the perception. What has happened in the last 40 years is we've seen some people make it. We look on TV, we see Oprah, and we see, okay, people are going to think that's us. She's good, she dresses well, so I don't have to. Where
right.
A generation of folks like your dad, or when I first came to this country, just me, first coming to this country as somebody 9 years old from the Caribbean, I'm thinking, well, because of my accent, they probably think I'm this and that, so I have to learn to do things their way to fit in. I have to become them in a way. I have to be better than them just so I can be equal. And I think what happens today is people look at it. Again, they see Obama. They see Condi Rice. They see us visibly up there in places of power, but you still got to do your job. You still, individually, as a black person, as any decent person in this country, have to do your job and be the best person you can, dress best, learn the rules of any situation, and follow them so you can get what you want from that situation.
Well, I think when in Rome, do as the Romans do. But we got some great comments. Oh, my God, I love today's show. This is the best. Ms. V says true, but let's stop trying to make other people feel comfortable with us based on what they perceive as right, correct, etc. Marcus says, somewhere around integration, some things has caused our community to change negatively. The High Road says, true, don't be less black. Black equals excellence. Raise the standard and be excellent. Well, y'all all know, I talk about my kids almost every day, and they now see whether it's like it's been planted in their brain subconsciously. When you hopefully, because they've made common references to it, that when I have kids now, I'm gonna have to dress up when I go to their school. Well, you're damn right, you will. So I'm hoping that as a parent, I am teaching them to have standards. My sons sag their pants all the time, and it makes me crazy. I'm like, can you please pull up your pants? Can you please pull up your pants? Like, I just don't understand how our standards got so lost. And I don't necessarily think it's assimilation. I just think it's decorum, period. Is it that we're trying to assimilate to be like white people, or is it just basic decorum?
No, but I mean, I think it's again, what Ms. V was saying, is just, we live in a time where cultures are melding. It used to be that we were separated, so they thought we were poor. Like you said, we just wore the sneakers, the dirty sneakers, so we had to show them that we were more than that. And now,
right,
we're sort of mixing around, and there's a general youth way of dressing. Come on, you've been to your son's school. There are white kids dressing with their pants sagging down more than he is. And this is not to say anything about them or us, but there's this general tendency these days to try to act one particular way. It used to be, again, if we're stuck in Cabrini Greens in good times, we're acting like the people in Cabrini Greens in good times. If we are in Brooklyn, where the Huxtables live, we're going to act that way. Now the world, because of information and people having access, come on. I'm in North Carolina. We're talking on a radio show on the phone. We're connected.
I love it.
1,000 miles apart. So people are sharing and people are mixing, and the things that separate us, they're kind of dissolving, and it's unfortunate. When in a sense, when we were separated, people had a stronger sense. And this is not me advocating separate, but I'm just saying there's like Ms. V was saying, something is lost, something has been lost when things melt and things meld into each other. But that's the reality we face, and we got to figure out a way out of it.
You know, I just think a lot of it, I didn't live in the 60s, so, you know, I was born in the 70s baby. But I, from what I see, you know, with things being segregated, black people relied on black people to survive. Because that's all we had. Maybe was it better when we were separate? You know, I don't have an opinion either way, but I'm just saying, how do we let our younger generations know to have some respect for yourself? I remember in the eighth grade, this was 1985, I wore these things called gauchos, and they were like shorts or something, and they touched my knee. But I remember they called my grandmother to come pick me up from school because my knees were showing. This is 1985. You go to my kids' school now? Please. The only thing they need, they might as well put pasties over their breasts and the kids go to school half naked. What has happened to our standards, our values, decorum? Is it hip-hop's fault? Is it the crack epidemic's fault? What is it?
No, we can't blame hip-hop. I think in general, what has happened is that a business mentality has taken over much of our lives. And why was your grandmother coming at you? Because nobody was selling short skirts to girls. Nobody was selling short skirts to girls in 1985 because there was no money in it. Now, when there's competition and, you know, somebody's going to buy the short skirts, somebody will. We know how to market it to people, so we're all going to start making short skirts and just sell it to because we know we can make money from it. So that's what's happened. That's what's happened. There's a bigger world. You are influencing more people with this radio show than you could possibly have 3, 4, 5 years ago. So it's a bigger world. There's more market for you to spread your ideas and your business and your philosophy. So why not do it if you wanna make money? That's what's really going on. It's a bigger world. There's more competition from all over the world. So you got to be in the game. And if somebody's selling short skirts, by God, you're going to sell short skirts because you want to make money too. That's what's going on.
I have a friend who's a celebrity, and she's got a daughter. And I remember her saying to me that, Saida, I can't even buy my daughter a one-piece bathing suit because I can't find one in the store. And her daughter at the time was 9. And I'm saying, you can't, you know, I have sons, so I don't know, you know. My whole kid's wardrobe was jeans and T-shirts and a pair of sneakers. So they're not even making clothes. Even if a parent wants to buy normal stuff, they can't even find it in the stores because they're not even selling it. And you know something? I have to agree with Marcus, who just hit me up in the chat room. Hip-hop has had some influence. Hip-hop is one of the most influential mechanisms to reaching people in the world. So to not say hip-hop has had any influence is to say that, I think it's to slight us, because Puffy has this saying now, and the saying is no bitch-assness. If I see another T-shirt that says that, it's going to make me crazy. Like, he can just come out with something, and now everybody's doing it. Everybody's wearing it. Like, Jay-Z has tried to grow hip-hop up by throwing on a button-up, you know, throwing on some jeans, you know, fitting jeans and shit. But it's not even working. Is it because the damage has already been done?
And I forgot. I didn't hear what you said. Puff Daddy's got a shirt that says what?
Oh, he has this saying, and it says, no bitch-assness. B-I-T, but it's all one word. B-I-T-C-H-A-S-S-N-E-S-S. And it's, I can't describe what it means. Like, I don't even know. Like, don't be a crybaby, I guess, so to speak. But it's like he created this word, and now it's part of our lexicon. Like, now it's part of what young people say. Like, how did that happen? How did Puffy say something, and all of a sudden now it's part of, just like bling bling is now part of, you know, American English.
Well, I mean, hip-hop is very influential. I don't discount that. But sometimes we overanalyze or give it too much credence and give it too much. Of course, when you're dealing with young kids, and again, the more my son grows up, I'm sure the more true everything you're saying is going to.
Maybe I'm a little cynical. I'm sorry.
No, but I get. I mean, we're talking about the government policies that put people in positions where money's taken out of education. So that, well, like you said before, like Boykin or said, that balance. If Puffy's saying
right.
There should be some balance in your school, that means there should be funding in the school. That's what really we should be talking about. It's about educating the kids to see that there is another option. And it's unfortunate because the options they're seeing, Puffy's everywhere, Russell's everywhere, Jay-Z's everywhere. How do you balance that? Those are the real issues.
I think what destroyed us as a people, I think what really destroyed
black...
We're
not destroyed. You can't say that. We're not destroyed.
I feel that way. I feel that way.
Well, my mission
is to
change your mind.
Well, then maybe I'll rephrase it and say, I think what is leading to our rapid, expedient demise is something called lifestyle marketing. Because what I believe, and this is just my total belief, what I believe happened is this. At one point... and I'm only referring to black people or urban dwellers, that we had our life, and our life consisted of responsibility, going to work, taking care of your family, raising your children, for however many years that standard was in place. When corporations started this quote-unquote lifestyle marketing concept, what they did is methodically interject their brands, their products, their goods and services into our lifestyle. So what happened is there was no distinction between fantasy and reality. So if the reality was we're responsible, we get up and go to school, our parents get up and go to work, you know, even if you're living with one parent and not two, whatever your lifestyle was entertainment. Think about it, on a Friday night, people would put the records on in the living room and you dance to it. But during the week, you went to work, you listened to the news, watched TV as a family, whatever you did. And on the weekend, you kind of maybe danced or whatever. But with the prevalence of lifestyle marketing, where all of a sudden – the fantasy was interjected in our everyday living, I think that's where the beginning of our demise really started taking place. Think about Casual Fridays. The minute Casual Fridays became part of our lifestyle, they're all of a sudden business protocol and etiquette became so passé. Is what I'm saying making sense to anybody?
Yes, I mean, one of the things, when you brought up the short skirts, I said that for the last 15, 20 years, a business mentality has taken over our lives. People
right.
are thinking like businesses. People
right.
are thinking not just about thought, but what is going to make me money, or what is going to, what is going to get my message out there. And I think there was, I'm sure it wasn't this way 100%, but there was a more innocence. Time, it was a more innocent feel to life, I think, when I first got to this country, and before that, where you could almost go out and be you, do you. But now what you're being and doing is a brand. You're being the
right.
You're being, and I mean, even with just with you, for a business, you have to do it. Me, for the last 9 months, trying to establish myself as a speaker, as a writer, I have to do it. And when I talk to people, sometimes I forget to take off the hat of me promoting myself. Because
right.
8 billion people are doing it, and when I'm just dealing with another human being. Sometimes, I mean, I went to talk to a teenage retreat a couple of weeks ago in D.C., and one of the comments from the lady that hired me, well, I heard through a third party, was that I'm always selling.
But you're supposed to be when you're self-employed. I agree
right.
with that, though.
And that's the thing, but when it comes to just human relationships, there's a difference, but that difference has been... You know, those lines have been blurred. Like I said, in terms of culture and people, they used to be separate. They still are. Chinese always stay, Asians always seem to stay by themselves. But blacks by themselves, white by themselves. Then you go to your school today, people are melding. And so you have to try to create one general culture. You know, one Casual Fridays. Everybody wear this casual thing so we all feel relaxed. That, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. But it's a bigger thing going on. All the world is melding like that. every single ID in the world is melting into each other like that. And so the distinctions are being lost. And so what's being created is a new, there's going to be, you know, we used to wear the three-piece suit to go to church. 20 years from now, there's going to be a new three-piece suit, but it's just everybody's going to wear it.
You know what's so funny? I was in youth ministry for a very long time, and I never made my children wear a suit to church because I felt, what am I making them wear a suit for? They're going to wear it, and then I'm paying all this money for a suit. They're never going to wear it again. So my kids wore jeans, sneakers, and a button-up shirt to church, and my grandmother had a fit. She says, you can't let them go to church like that, but I'll tell you why I didn't. I did it because I want them, I use the lifestyle marketing concept. I have a big problem with church clothes and play clothes. If you're, and this can probably go off into another area, and maybe we'll talk about it next week, but if you have church clothes and play clothes, you're going to behave one way in church clothes and one way in your play clothes. I want my children to incorporate God into every area of their life. So if, in fact, that's the case, you have to bring a little God into your life, and you have to bring your life into God. And so I felt, as a parent, I was not going to mandate my children get dressed up, feel uncomfortable, feel out of pocket, to sit someplace for an hour and a half to 2 hours that they don't even want to be in. So, I mean, just even the mindset of the clothes, church clothes, play clothes, you know, the whole lifestyle marketing concept, I think, as I said, led to the beginning of the demise of our people, because now everybody's walking around with this I'm so hood, what's up, son, attitude instead of saying, hi, how are you? And we can see that right on the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Think about the conversations that took place between Carlton and Will. Will used to tease Carlton all the time because he wore plaid, he wore loaf. You know, so we play that scenario out every single day in hoods across America.
I think it's a choice that you're making. If you have a certain standard, which you certainly do for your kids, and you know who they are. I mean, the same thing sort of happened to me. The first time my grandmother slapped my face was me going to church and telling her I don't want to wear these clothes.
Right.
You know, my white friends, they go to Catholic church and they'll be jeans and sneakers and show up, and I'm like, why can't I do that? Why do I got to put this button down on or this collared shirt, and there's no air condition at the church, and I'm going to be there for 3 hours? And she just gave me a slap and said, get out, go to church. You know, but there's a certain standard.
Can I say something really quickly?
Yeah.
Can I say something really quickly? I just want to respond to something in the chat room. We're down in the last 3 minutes of the show. Just everybody so you know, Orantu is a speaker. Go to YouTube, go to his YouTube page, which is youtube.com, BYG Inc. Presents. And I want to have you give your final thoughts, but I want to answer something that was mentioned in the chat room. It says, Hyrule says, that's not true. Everyone else is retaining their identity except for us. Why do black people feel that we have to melt into anything, be black in America? I'm saying because our identity was taken away. Let me give you a real quick scenario because we're down to 3 minutes of the show. I went to a private school in New York City, one of the most expensive private schools in New York City. Right now the tuition is about $25,000 for a four-year-old. Now, I remember when I started attending that school in fourth grade, I went to school, and I wrote about it in my book, From Hip Hop to Heaven, because it freaked me out. I went to school the very first day with a white shirt with a bow, a navy blue skirt, and loafers, and that's the way I was raised. When I went to school, all these other kids had ripped jeans, run-over sneakers, T-shirts. I would never wear a T-shirt to school. But when I realized how loaded these kids' parents were, and I wrote about it in my book, that's when I realized they can do whatever they want as white people. We cannot do that. I always had to dress better because just imagine I wear what they wear to school. It doesn't matter what school I attended. I'm still black, and now I look sloppy. Does this make sense to anybody, or is it just me?
No, I agree with you to a certain extent, but I think it also has to do with status and money. Now, I mean, there are rich black kids, the Baldwin Hill type kids, or I think there's a county, Prince George's County, Maryland, one of the richest black counties in America. I'm sure they have the freedom. I mean, if you have the freedom and the money and you don't care what other people's perceptions are, dress, you're going to dress however you want. Look at Andre 3000. I think you made a joke about him or somebody made it. I mean, if you got the money, you got the money and you're above perception, what does it matter? But again, it's certain people who are, if you're in a position where people are looking down on you, you have to, just like you said, you have to present a certain image all the time, and it's troubling, and it's a little bit extra than what your friends might be doing, but as black people, it's what we've always done. But it wasn't to appease a white community. It was to be the best that we can be. And I think that is what being lost. It's about being the best that we can be.
Did I lose everybody? I hope not. We're down to the last 90 seconds of the show. Oh, good. I didn't lose anybody. Good. I just got it. We're down to the last 90 seconds. You are such a sweetheart, and I do want to have you back. We might bring you back as just like a resident guest commentator because I just absolutely love having conversations with you.
You said Tuesday. Tuesday is an offer.
I just want to say one thing really quickly because we're down to the last minute of the show. You know something? If I took that same philosophy from when I walked into that school at 9 years old and relaxed my standards, it would destroy me as a business person today. No matter where I was educated, no matter how good my business was, if I took that same mentality, I have money, and put that into my business practices today, I would be destroyed because they would think I was sloppy and ran my business the same way. But on that note, I have to end it. I want to thank everybody who hit us up in the chat room, the High Road, Ficklin Media Group, Marcus Boston, Miss V on the scene. Who else was in the chat room? Oh, I'm down to the last 10 seconds. Oh, my God, and I can't screw up and not do our prayer. The light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us. The power of God protects us. The presence of God watches over us. Wherever I am, God is. Wherever you are, God is. Thanks, God, and so it is. Amen.
Amen.